Hello and welcome to Bird Fans Forever. I have a special guest host in Dick Lutke. Take it away, Dick.
Hey, great to be with you, John. I enjoy the Bird Fans Forever podcast and thrilled to be a part of it. We have a special guest for this show by the name of Julie Miller-Paska, the former volleyball standout for Illinois State and the former academic advisor at Illinois State, helping athletes, student athletes, be quality students. Julie, welcome to this podcast. Appreciate having you here.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. I'm excited.
Well, let's talk about your volleyball career at Illinois State. Where did you come from, and when did it start?
So, I started actually playing volleyball. I didn't start playing until I got into high school, which is kind of unusual these days. Most kids start much younger, but back then, my freshman year in high school was the first time I started playing, and the high school I went to, and really just to give how old I am, 1972 was when Title IX passed, and I was really in high school 77 to 81. So girl sports were just kind of getting started, getting going, and we had an excellent volleyball coach. We didn't have all the sports. There was no basketball at my high school. There was just volleyball, archery, track, and softball, I believe, were the only sports available at the time I was there. And my dad, of course, saw that. I mean, I'm from a very large family. I have eight of us, seven siblings. And six of us are girls, two brothers, and my dad was pretty, you know, saw this thing coming for girls' sports and really wanted us to play sports. He wouldn't let me be a cheerleader at that time. But volleyball was the fall sport, so that's the one I played, and that was when I just got started, and I have two older sisters who played at the same time as I did. But all six girls in our family played volleyball. So we had a pretty good team, and I actually, my junior year, 1979, we came up to the state tournament, which was played in Horton Fieldhouse, and we won. We won the Class A state tournament that year, and the next year we came back, so my senior year we came back. We were in the tournament, but we got beat in the first round, but Linda Herman was the head coach here, and my senior year, after I finished, we lost. I'm down in the locker room crying with the rest of my team because my high school career is over. And my coach comes into the locker room. She takes me upstairs to Linda Herman's office and said, Linda wants, the head coach at ISU wants to talk to you. So I go up there, and of course, I'm still crying. And she says, you know, I'd like to offer you a full scholarship at Illinois State. So that was my very first offer, and that was right at the end of my senior year. So you can see kind of the difference in recruiting then as now. Now kids are recruited and made offers pretty young. But back then, you really couldn't even talk to a player until they were done with their senior year of playing. That you couldn't talk to them during their season. But anyway, that was my first offer, and that's how I knew Illinois State. I got to come up here and play in Horton Fieldhouse on the court as part of the state tournament. So my recruiting process was pretty, you know, short actually in today's thing, but it seemed like it took forever for me because there were no limits on how often they could call you. There were no limits. I was getting phone calls every single night from, and there were five schools that were pretty persistent: Nebraska, Mizzou, Illinois State, Missouri State, and Southern Illinois. Those were my final five. And back then, they didn't pay for you to go on visits. You had to pay your own way. So to visit a school was very, you know, challenging, especially for my family with seven other kids at home. You know, to take me to these visits was expensive. But I did visit all of them except for Nebraska. But during my club season, I did have a chance to play at Nebraska. My club volleyball team was out of St. Louis, and we traveled all over the Midwest, so I was able to see a lot of the schools through that route. But went on visits to all the other schools and ultimately decided on Illinois State. It just seemed like the right fit for me. I mean, I'm from a really small town. About 450 people live there. So going to Nebraska, going to Mizzou, these campuses were very overwhelming for me. Illinois State is a very compact campus, and it's, you know, very I can really navigate it easily, and I felt comfortable here. And Linda was an excellent recruiter. She did a really nice job. And Southern Illinois, Missouri State, all were very good programs. Mizzou was actually only in their second year of having a volleyball program, so they were very new. Illinois State had already established itself. They had gone to they were top eight, I think, in AIAW. The teams leading up to me coming here, I want to say the late 70s, they were so strong under Linda. So I got to see how amazing and well established the women's sports were at Illinois State. They were definitely a leader in women's sports. We got to play in the same facility that the men's basketball team played in. When I went and looked at Mizzou and Nebraska, they had, you know, side gyms that we got to play in and compete in. But at Illinois State, we were in the top gym. And we got to compete. We had great locker rooms. We had all the access. The same things that the men had were already here in the early 80s. So that was a big contender for me. When I went to Southern, they had another. They have a Davies gym. It wasn't the arena. They didn't get to play in the arena. Missouri State was one of the top three. You know, they also had a very strong winning program back then. So it did come down to those five schools, and then I ultimately chose Illinois State. So they also had five seniors graduating from Illinois State. So I saw an opportunity to maybe get into the starting lineup a little more quickly than at the other schools. So that's how I got here, and had a lot of transitions throughout my 4 years. Just so much change was going on at that time, and I know we're gonna get into that a little bit, but it was a great school. I never doubted my choice to come here.
What, Julie, you mentioned that basketball was not available to you at high school.
Right.
So is that one of the reasons why you became so interested in being a volleyballer?
Actually, yes, because, you know, in junior high, I'm from a high school that has like seven little towns that all, you know, all went to this high school. So there were several. But in my little town, we had basketball for girls in junior high. But when I got to high school, it wasn't available. And so I'm like, okay, then I'll just play volleyball. Years later, when my younger sisters went to high school, it was there. They now had basketball as an option. But it wasn't an option for me. For me, it was archery or volleyball. And then in the spring was track and softball, and I did compete in track as well in high school. So I did volleyball and track all 4 years in high school. And in my junior year of high school, my coach, who is, you know, very forward thinking, she encouraged me to go to this developmental camp, and I was selected to try out for this club team, which was kind of an all-star team from the St. Louis area. And that I made that team, and then got to play. I had coaches that were college coaches. It was really a great experience. I played in St. Louis. They had same club, had teams in Des Moines, Iowa, Omaha, Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Kansas City. So we would play each other, and then we traveled out to California at the end of the season and played in the national tournament out there. So it was an extremely great experience. And when I got to college, I played against a lot of those club members, like y'all do. A lot of the team members went to Mizzou or Nebraska or Illinois. They just were all over. But Cindy Harris, who is actually an administrator at Illinois State right now, she was on that same club team, and she lived in Springfield, Illinois, and traveled to St. Louis to play on that club. And I was from the Belleville area, just east of St. Louis, and I had to travel about an hour and a half to get to where we trained. And did that. And in addition to running track, I did that all in the spring seasons during my high school years. And that got me seen as well, playing in club and then playing in the state tournament. So it was a neat experience. But yes, basketball was not something. I was very disappointed in that because I loved playing basketball in junior high. It just wasn't an option at my high school. So.
Well, it's amazing the quality of volleyball you played at Illinois State, and of course played later. You played at the World University Games in 1985. You were on a professional volleyball team in Chicago. But what would you say, how did you become so talented at that sport that was your second favorite as a youngster?
Yeah. You know, it was funny because I feel like I had imposter syndrome for a while. Like I was in a sport I wasn't supposed to be in. You know, I was going through college the first couple of years going, I don't know that this is really if I fit, because I was playing with kids from Chicago who'd been playing for so many years and I'd only played a couple of years. But by my junior season at ISU, I think under the tutelage of Sandy Lynn and just the level of play she brought, you know, Linda, at the end of my freshman year, she had just finished her doctorate and was going into administration. So she did that and hired Sandy Lynn to replace herself, which is kind of crazy, but she picked Sandy. Sandy had an amazing background. She had played for the national team. She had played for Utah State, the national champions in AIW. And then she coached at Texas and brought so much new knowledge, and she had been through it herself. She also brought someone who trained us in strength and conditioning, which we didn't have before that. So that was sort of new. The kind of schedule we played teams all over the West Coast because that's where volleyball was pretty big. So she made sure to get those teams on our schedule. Linda did as well. I mean, we played out at Utah and UCLA, USC, Pepperdine, Cal Berkeley. We were all over the West Coast that first 2 years that I was playing. And when we went NCAA, so we were AIAW my freshman year. We switched over to NCAA my sophomore year through, you know, from then on was NCAA, and that's when we were first in a conference. So the conference playoffs was how we got into the national tournament. And my sophomore, junior, and senior year, we qualified for nationals every year. By my junior year, we were ranked in the top 20 because we were playing these top schools and we were starting to beat them. And then by my senior year, you know, we beat some key players. You know, we beat the defending national champions, Hawaii. In my senior year, we were ranked then up in the top 10 during my senior year at ISU. And, you know, the difference in scheduling now, back then, the Gateway Conference, we only played each team in our conference one time, you know, home or away. And the next year it would be the reverse, and the next year it would be the reverse. But that left so much room in our schedule to go to these tournaments and conference and go play these schools that were in the rankings, you know, in the Big Ten. And I think the two schools that gave us the most headaches was Purdue and Northwestern. They were, you know, our nemesis. They were the ones that was so tough for us to beat. I want to say my freshman year, we saw Purdue at like Northwestern. We saw them like 9 times that year at all these different tournaments or home and away, and I think we only beat them one time out of those 9 times. But then as we progressed and we got to my senior year, that's when we started beating those teams and getting rankings. And that got us visible to those coaches, which helped with the All-American selection at the end of that year for me, for sure.
All right, Julie. Right. You talked about, I loved hearing about the times, how things are different in recruiting from your time to today. We were kind of laughing off air about that. Love to hear, okay, compare volleyball to when you played. You were going through like the libero and all that stuff. Kind of talk us through the changes that have gone on in volleyball.
Yeah, it's been a great evolution, I would say, from when we played. When I played, it was only side out. I mean, you could only score when you served. Now there's rally scoring, so teams score every time they win a rally. Back in the day, if the other team was serving and we would win the rally, we didn't get a point, but we got the serve. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's like now it's yep. Rally scoring. It's the intention was to get the game to go a little faster and to fit on TV, you know, not to take forever, because we played in some pretty long matches where it was side out, side out, side out, side out, and it was to make it more television friendly. Another big change is the libero position, which is a position where that person usually wears a different colored uniform and can come onto the court and sub in for anybody, and they don't count against your subs. You can, you know, go in and out for any person, and they only play the back row. They're not supposed to be an extra setter, so they can't overhead set. There's a lot of rules about what a libero can and can't do, but their primary purpose is to be the best defensive player on the court. So they take out some of the taller players and put the libero in for those players in the back row. Also, another thing that's different is when we used to serve and it would hit the top of the net and fall in to the court, it was an error, and the other team got the serve. Now it's just played. They keep playing. Again, it was another thing to keep the game going. So most of the time when that happens, when it hits the tape, and it usually goes down for an ace. In our day, it was an error. So look at the stats differences on some of those things. So back then, because we didn't have libero, everybody was trained on defense. So we tended to play, all of our players played all the way around, which was great. It was fun. You didn't come out of the game. You didn't lose that momentum that you kept on going. So that was the way we had played that 1984 team that we talked about that was ranked in the top 10, the way that Sandy Lynn got us to play and to beat teams, because I'm only 5'8". I'm not that tall. Our team was 5'8 to 5'11". That was our team. We weren't as tall as a lot of the other teams, but I have the God-given freakish long arms my jump was good, and I have these long arms where my reach when I'm standing is the same as someone who's 5'11 or 6 foot. So we were deceptively, you know, we were short, but deceptively, and we would play the game very low. We would pass low, we would set low, we would do everything quick so that we could beat the other team in order to make their block not be able to block us. That was our big goal. So we spent a lot of time on passing and digging balls to a target so we could run a fast offense. So that was kind of the thing that made us very successful. There were a lot of other, let's see, what are the other things that are different? I guess I would say there are so many more club teams in the country now. There are so many more places. There are so many more opportunities for girls in high schools to play volleyball. I mean, my daughter started playing when she was in third grade, you know, and I didn't start till I was a, you know, freshman in high school. So when they start is a lot different. They're already, like, when her junior high, I should say JV team in high school was running plays we were running in college, just because they're to that point. They're more mature than we were in terms of the game knowledge. So it's just come so far that way. It's a great thing for girls to have that kind of opportunity. To play. I mean, taking my daughter to the national tournament in Orlando, Florida, where there's 120 courts and teams on these courts that, you know, all the different ages. It's just amazing to see where when I was playing, there was one tournament out in California. We all had to get to California to play in the national tournament. It's just so much more opportunity, and it's a good thing.
Well, you know, Illinois State volleyball, Julie, has been strong. It was strong before you got there. It's been strong ever since, but maybe very rarely as strong as it was in the early 80s when you were there, and that had to be thrilling. I assume that the crowds in front of which you played were not as large back then because the interest in women's sports was not what it is now, but still, it had to have been thrilling to have been as successful as you and the Redbirds were at that time.
Definitely. I mean, it was so exciting to rise, to get into the top 20, to learn about that. Like, we're in the top 20, and then to get into the top 10, it was amazing. But you're right, the crowds weren't there, and unfortunately, the marketing wasn't there to get the crowds there. Do you know what I mean? So that has changed drastically. And I think for women's sports, I mean, you're just seeing it all blow up right now. It's just so amazing. And I think the teams that we had were really fun to watch, but they didn't really come out because they didn't know what was going on. I will tell you that it hurt us in my senior year. We were ranked, so first rounds of nationals, for starters, there was only 28 teams that made it to nationals back then. That was another difference. Now there's 64. Okay, so there were only 28 teams. We were there. First round, if you win, you're in the Sweet 16. So your first round, you were supposed to play it at the highest ranked team's home site. Then there was a regional and then Final Four, etc. But Sophomore year, we won the conference tournament. We go to Arizona State. They're ranked number 8 in the country. That's our first round. We got to play them, and we took them to 4 games. We did pretty well, but we lost. So junior year, we have to go to Purdue to play. We make it to the first round. We have to go play at Purdue. Goes 5 games. It's a very close match, and we lose that game. My senior year, we're finally the highest ranked team. We have to play Western Michigan. We're ranked in the top 10. They're ranked number 19. But the NCAA decided, because Western Michigan brings in 8,000 fans, we're going to go play there because we don't have the fan base that they did. We end up losing in 4. Because it was a horrible place to play for a visiting team. I mean, they filled their stadium, and we made the mistake of wearing our jerseys that had our first name on the back. So their fans had fun with that, and it was just not a very – we didn't play our best game, obviously, but that was the year we were supposed to win that first round, and it didn't happen. But several years later, as you said, Illinois State has had a tradition of having really good teams. Even in the 90s, early 90s, I think it was 92 team when Kim Nelson Brown's team was playing. I think I got to do the color analysis on that game on radio or television. I can't remember. But they beat Houston, I believe, in the first round, which was amazing. And in that year, I think there were 48 teams. They had bumped it up to 48 teams that went to the national tournament. Now I think there's 64. So, but yeah, it was so having the fan base, such a big deal at that time. So, yeah.
Yep. Well, and yeah, there's a much bigger fan base at Illinois State and everywhere for women's athletics than there used to be. But for me, the one sport that is more entertaining at the women's level than at the men's level is volleyball, because volleyball points for women last longer and are more entertaining. The men, they serve it harder, they slam it harder, and the points don't last as long. I love watching women's volleyball.
Yes, it is so fun, and you're right about that. It is one of the sports where the men's volleyball hasn't outshined it, because their level, their type of play, their net is higher. It's an 8-foot net, but sometimes I feel like it should be even higher than that, because it's pass, set, kill. Pass, set, kill. It's over so quickly. Yeah. And a lot of their serves are just serve ace. Whereas the women's rallies are really long and really fun to watch. They are fun.
Yep.
I'll have to agree with you on that.
Men's versus women's sports. We talked about this just a little bit earlier, but when you were young, women's athletics just didn't get the support. When you were really young and you wanted to be an athlete, did you get some conflict in your attempt to do that? Was that hard back then, would you say?
I would say, I think because of where I grew up and how I grew up with so many siblings, and honestly, my next door neighbors, they also had 8 kids, and my dad put a backstop up in our field in the backyard, and we had baseball pickup games. All the kids played. It didn't matter, boys, girls. And my dad was big into baseball, so he threw a ball with us, all of us. We'd have games of catch in the backyard all the time, which I think is why I had the arm swing that I had for volleyball, because that's how you train a volleyball attack, is how you throw a baseball, and throwing it down to the floor, throwing. And so I feel like me and all my sisters, I have 5 sisters, 3 of us played college volleyball. We all learned how to hit the right way. With your left foot forward, if your right hand, all of that stuff wasn't always taught. Like when I worked volleyball camps, I worked camps at Illinois State for 20 years, teaching kids how to hit when they don't know which foot to put forward. It almost was a natural thing for me. And I think the town that we grew up in really fostered a lot of participation. And it was such a small school that all kids had to play in order to make a team work. Actually, there was a time when I was in 8th grade that our boys basketball team didn't have enough players, and they asked me to play. That they wanted me to play with the boys so we would have a full team. But because we had a girls team, they didn't allow a girl to play on the boys' team, but they, you know, they didn't have enough boys. It was just such a small school. But that was a memory that I have that was pretty funny. I was like, yes, I'll play, you know. But I really was lucky in that my dad saw things coming, my mom and dad, because my mom didn't have the opportunities that we had. And my dad was saw, you know, Title IX, there's going to be room for girls' sports. This is what you got to do. And we all played sports. All six girls played volleyball. My brothers both played sports as well. But we were very lucky with where I grew up. The high school I went to was very forward-thinking. So I was very blessed with that.
So we were off air talking about travel, and Julia's good friends with Beth Landis Ayers. And Beth Landis was my academic advisor, and I didn't even know it that she was the number three all-time leading scorer at the time. I do want to get, we'll hit one more thing, and just a reminder to my co-stars here. In the final segment, we want to talk about Julie's service aces. She's number one all time, and she's got a little thing she wants to talk about that. We'll come back and laugh about that later. But talk about travel in the 80s for the volleyball team.
So my freshman year, we were mostly traveling by station wagon, just like Beth described in her podcast. It was station wagons, several of them driven by the coaches. So when you're heading to Chicago or you're going somewhere where the weather's a little iffy and you've got that kind of a back end, it could be a little scary. But I would say as my career went on, we got to charter buses was more common to go to all the, you know, conference games and anything that's within a few hours. Of course, when we went to California, we went to some of those big tournaments, we would fly out of usually O'Hare. So we would drive, you know, the station wagons or vans up to O'Hare and then fly from there. But I do remember just a really rough weekend. We drove down to Missouri State, played them on Friday night, drove up to Wichita State, played them on Saturday night. On the way home, we stop at Mizzou, play them on Sunday, drive home. So it's like, you know, in 3 days, that length of travel and then competing was just, I mean, the legs were just dead after that. But I will say one of my most memorable trips that we traveled to was the University of Hawaii. I mean, we got to do a Hawaii trip, which was amazing in the fall. We first flew to Cal Berkeley, played in a tournament out there, played against Pepperdine and Wyoming and some really great teams. I think we finished fourth in that tournament, and then we flew to Hawaii from there, and we got to play the University of Hawaii. We were there for 7 days. The first day was travel. The next 5 days, we played a match every night. We played the University of Hawaii and beat them in 5 games. It was just amazing. They were the defending national champions. They have the best crowds that you can imagine because they know the game so well. And they would clap no matter who won the point. They just clapped whenever it was a great play, a great point, whatever it was. They were amazing. So we played them, beat them in 5 games. Then we went and played Chaminade, BYU Hawaii, Hawaii Pacific, and played University of Hawaii a second time. And that time they beat us in 5 games, but it was very close and very exciting volleyball. That was one of my favorite trips of all time. Of course, we missed it was a 10-day total trip, so we missed a lot of school. And back then we didn't have online anything, so you had to take tests early or turn things in early or get permission to turn them in late. So that was kind of a crazy trip, but one of my favorites. It was a great, great experience. But yeah, we never got to, I know now they fly charter flights to even conference games. So the point of that really is to not miss so much school. They can go fly, play their game and come back and not really miss many classes, but we missed a lot more, I feel like. So that's definitely an improvement, and that's really a real privilege to get to do that. So
it is, and it makes it your time away from school much less, right? Because
yes,
you zip
sure.
in the day before, you get your pregame stuff in, the day of the game you participate, and then that night you're flying. For us, we would always fly into the next location because we'd always have 2-game swings. But for you guys. In today's modern era, they get to fly right home. So That is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about, you and I were touching base yesterday, we talked about crazy practices that were allowed in the 80s that are not allowed today.
Yes. So we had, and this became apparent, this was kind of the Sandy Lynn era. She really made us a great team, no doubt. And I learned a ton under her and really developed as a player, just went so far. But she had a technique, and I'm sure it wasn't something she made up because I've seen it. We saw it on the movie Miracle about the 1980 hockey team when they would run sprints after a game, you know, when the game was over. So I have this very vivid memory of a game against Southern Illinois University. Before the game started, Coach made a deal with us. She said we should be beating this team, you know, 15-5. We only played to 15 when it was the way we scored it back then. The game was to 15. She said 15-5, all three games, we're out of here in three games. They should only score 5 points on us each game. So she said for every point over that, we are going to run 5 sprints. And we're like, we didn't deal with negative reinforcement very well. So first game, I think they scored 9. So we're like, oh, crap, we're already behind. But we won. We won the first game 15-9. Second game was like 15-6. Third game, they won 15 to whatever. But that's their 15 points. Last game, we beat them 15-11. So we win, but we win it in 4 games. And one of the assistant coaches keeping track does the math. We have to run 125 sprints right then, like right after the match. And here I am. We're at Southern Illinois University. My family is all there. My high school, you know, friends and all these people, because it's near my hometown. It's not too far. It's like an hour and a half from my hometown. So I had all these fans like waiting to talk to me after the game. But no, she takes the team. We're in Davies Gym, and they have this attached smaller gym right next door. We go in there and we proceed to run our 125 sprints. We do like 10 at a time. It took forever. It just took forever. And I wouldn't say they were sprints by the time we were getting to like 50, 60. We were just practically crawling. And here's my family, you know, in those gyms, they just have the little window in the door. They're like peeking through. When is she going to get done? You know, all of that. They all ended up leaving because it took forever. So, and they're like, they won. What does she do to them when they lose? You know, but that was a memory that was one time. But.
And Julie, it seemed like we would either wait to get back and we would be in the North Gym, or we'd be after the game in Horton and in the North Gym. So ours always happened in the North Gym. I walk into the North Gym and I still shudder at times, right? I know it's a beautiful practice facility, but wow,
so
right? The number of times you're running in there after hours.
Yes, we trained in the North Gym and then we competed up in Horton Fieldhouse. But we had a reunion when we all turned 50. We came back and we went into the North Gym and everybody kind of got that queasy feeling just from the smell of the gym, just being in there because of some of the practices we had. We had things that were called reality training. And what that was is there was a goal for the drill and you didn't get out of the drill until you hit that goal. So it could be, for example, jumping and hitting a ball. Coach would toss, jump and hit the ball, run around a chair, hit the next ball, run around the chair, and you'd have to get 15 kills. You know, and you could be there for quite a long time because the coach was the one counting and she didn't count them if it clipped the top of the net or if it wasn't hard enough or any of those things, but you had to get 15 kills to get out of it. So it was, we had closed gym, closed doors. The doors were always closed. Nobody could walk through there for practice. So that was kind of how we rolled, but we had some pretty rough practices, but I think it did make us very tough. It made us mentally tough. We knew there were no other teams training like that. We didn't think. And so when we got to those fifth games, we knew we could beat them. So I think I couldn't hear all of that, but I think you were asking about the number one in service aces. I believe what happened, because I think I did the math, And I was like, I don't think I could even have that many. I don't even think that was possible. The number of time I served divided by the number of games, I just don't think that was possible. Plus, I wasn't like one of the first servers in the game. I was like the third or fourth server. I think what happened was they got transposed with my blocks or something. Some stats, I'm not sure. I don't know how it got mixed up, but I think that's the wrong stat. So I feel like it got fixed later on. I know I talked to Tom LaMonica about it, said I don't think that that's correct. So.
All right, Julie, here we are, last segment. Bird fans forever. We call this closing arguments. Stage is yours.
All right, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for doing this podcast. This is amazing work, and I'm just so glad I got to be on it with you. It was fun. I would say, you know, looking back on my athletics career and how much it impacted my professional career and even just my family, we didn't really even talk about it, but I did meet my husband through while I was coaching at ISU and raised our kids here. But I would go back as far to my high school and just say what an amazing place to go to high school. And my high school coach just provided so many opportunities and really pushed, even my high school track coach pushed and encouraged to go on to college and play in college. And then to get to go to Illinois State, where women's athletics was far in advance, it's for so many, it's compared to so many places in the early 80s. And Linda Herman, Sandy Lynn, Julie Morgan, Jill Hutchison, Melinda Fisher, Kathy Schneidwin, Margie Wright. I mean, all of these women that were role models for me and for my team. The team I got to play with, well, I'm going to get emotional here, but the team, the players I got to play with, who I'm just so close to still today, they were amazing. And, you know, we didn't really talk about, but I do have all of the members of our team in 84 went on to become teachers, coaches, and coaches even at the college level. We had, you know, I coached for 5 years, but I had two teammates who coached 20 plus years, 30 years, and one that's coaching in a new professional league right now. But all of us went into education and really went forward with teaching and coaching, and that was a legacy that we learned here at Illinois State, and it's just something I'm so very proud of. So thank you so much for having me and for interviewing my husband next. I'm excited to see that, but we really appreciate you having us.
Perfect. Julie, thank you so much. This has been Bird Fans Forever, episode 57 with Julie Pasca. And thank you very much. And here we go with the